It's heckin' Wimder.
And in Wimder, it's Wimdy.
Is that, Zach, is that where this podcast is held?
In the Wimder time?
In Wimderland.
A Wimdy Wonderland.
A Wimder Wonderland.
Wimdy Womba's Podcast Factory. And welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Ho, ho, who is my doctor?
Ho, ho, ho is indeed. As you could tell, we are doing a Christmas episode.
I didn't know that ho, ho, ho was a greeting. Ho, 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 my nerds!
Yes, today we are looking at the 2013 Christmas special.
Woo.
The Time of the Doctor.
Woo.
We had the name of the Doctor, the night of the Doctor, the day of the Doctor, and now we come to its to the end of the quadrilogy with the Time of the Doctor.
Is that the word for it? Quadrilogy?
Quadrilogy is four. Trilogy is three. Biology is two.
Wait, no, it's
duology. But yes, this is the end of
era.
The end of an era. Absolutely. This is, I mean, in a lot of ways, this was, I think, where a lot of people sort of jumped ship after this episode. Not for any like ill will towards the show. They had just had the 50th anniversary. And I think in a lot of ways that felt like
what it's a convenient place to stop.
Yeah, it had been a big event in the same way that like Avengers Endgame was also kind of a big event. And so a lot of people sort of left the Marvel Universe after Endgame too.
Hello.
Like, it's not that, you know, the show wasn't going to keep going or that the show got worse. It was just, it felt like an ending that people were satisfied with and they kept going. And this is the last episode Matt Smith is in. Big emotional feels for me because
can we expect to see some
almost certainly
those iconic Zachy tears.
Some Zach crying. Yeah, absolutely.
Some sad boy vibes coming at me from that side of the couch.
Nostalgic tears. I was actually trying to think about like why this one hit, like this special hit me so much harder than Tennant's did, even though, you know, David Tennant was also a great doctor. And I think there's two facets to it. I think the main
remind one, me, Tennant had just the one special or did he have two?
Tennant had several specials.
Holiday special?
Oh, holiday specials. He opened with a Christmas special.
Yeah, I remember being upset about the tea.
Yeah, he had the tea. And then he had the spider
that's
star.
Right, that's right.
The Runaway Bride.
With Donna,
where we meet Donna. Then after that, we had the Titanic. That was another
okay.
One.
Yeah.
And then after that, he had, I think, two Christmas specials after that, because he first had the Next Doctor, where he meets the guy who thinks he's the Doctor.
Yeah.
And then there's his actual finale, which was The End of Time.
Yes.
Where the Master is like a skeleton, it's like an electricity skeleton, and then dies.
Yeah.
And the Time Lords come back, and all kinds of weird, kooky shit. So that's one of the things I was going to say. I think this one hit me much harder, first and foremost, because I think this is a much better episode than The End of Time was. I think The End of Time was kind of a jumbled mess. In hindsight, I'm a little kinder to it on repeat viewings, but I think The Time of the Doctor works much better on its own. But also, I was thinking about when I started watching Doctor Who, obviously I had to get to David Tennant before I got to Matt Smith, but while I was watching through Tennant's era, Matt Smith had already become the Doctor. So what I was watching was like past episodes.
You were catching up.
I was catching up. But by the time I had caught up, it was in the middle of I think I was in the middle of series six. So, you know, it was still the Doctor, Amy and Rory. And that was what Doctor Who, that's the Doctor I was leading up to. And so by the time I got here, when I got to this episode, this was the first time for me, anyway, the Doctor, as I knew them, was leaving. Because I always knew Tenet becomes Matt Smith.
Yes.
I always knew these things. So for me,
you had, for lack of a better term, spoilers.
Yeah. Or at least I had like an emotional padding knowing what was coming.
Yeah.
And while I knew Peter Capaldi was going to take over, that I didn't know what that meant in the same way that I knew what Matt Smith taking over was going to feel like.
Your experience watching it for the first time is my experience watching this.
Yes. Yes, I do think so.
Doing this podcast.
Yeah. I think this episode definitely hit me a lot harder when it came out. But this episode isn't all about my experience. This is also about yours. Do you have any thoughts on what to expect from the time of the Doctor?
Both
Matt Smith's last episode and a Christmas special? Because we've had a couple of them for Matt Smith, too. This is his fourth.
But the Dickens one was so good.
Yeah, I do think A Christmas Carol is still better than this one. But of the four, I think this is my second favorite.
Like, do you realize how excited I am to, I had proposed a couple days ago to do a Christmas Carol marathon where I would watch, where I would watch as many different iterations of A Christmas Carol as I can possibly find. And it tickled me pink realizing that I could watch the Doctor Who one over again.
Which I don't think we could say that for many episodes. I don't think there's a lot of episodes that you're like.
I'm also so partial towards A Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
That there is a part of me that's like, this has fairly large boots to fill because of how
good that.
Of how kindly I think of and how much I really do love A Christmas Carol as a story, specifically how much I love when you can plug it into different contexts, and have different characters fill in those very familiar roles.
Yeah.
And so especially plugging it in for Doctor Who is like, oh, that's so fun and exciting because we're literally playing with time and space in a story that is not from an era where time and space was something that you could think to explore. So blending in that mysticism with science fiction is so fun for me. So this I have astonishingly low expectations for because I don't get the feeling that it is going to blow me off.
Knock me off my feet.
Blow me out of my seat.
Knock your socks off. Blow your mind.
Thank you. Blow my mind. Yes.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what's in the episode, because there's one thing I've brought it up to you before, but we've established that the Doctor can only regenerate 12 times. He can regenerate 12 times. So that means he has 13 incarnations.
Uh-huh.
Because you start from one. So with that in mind, we now know that the War Doctor is in there, so that means the 11th Doctor is technically the 12th Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But we also, if you remember, David Tennant once put a regeneration into his own hand.
Yeah.
Do you think that counts?
Is this a prophecy question?
This is just a curiosity.
Yeah. Does that count? Well, because he also gave, like, also has given other people, like, didn't he give River Song? No, opposite. She gave him.
Well, they both did. River gave him some, and then he gave River some back.
Because I feel like that's filtering into the same thing of, does that count?
Yeah, that's a good question. Basically, here's the question. Do you think the Doctor is out of regenerations or not? And if he is out, how do you think he would get them?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
I'm just curious. It's going to be some bullshit answer, I know.
I was just curious if you had any thoughts on that.
That's some wibbly wobbly dummy wummy stuff, Zach. Yeah, like I have every expectation of whatever I say is both going to be wrong and whatever the answer is going to be stupid. So I don't even want to humor your question with an answer.
Well, in that case, we'll find out as we watch the show. So let's get into the real Cassie for Fassy questions today. I try to come up with ones that I thought would be more fun for you.
Mm-hmm.
So these you will get an answer for pretty quick. So that way we can just kind of enjoy the episode. In this special, the Doctor has taken on one of his usual enemies as, I don't know if you want to call it a sidekick or a pet, but he's taken one of them into the TARDIS.
Okay.
Do you think that enemy is a Dalek, a Cyberman or a Sontaran?
Oh my God, I want it. I want it so badly to be a Dalek. So much so that I think you've learned my method of the game, where if you put answers that I like, I am more inclined to pick those.
I'm really curious how you're going to answer the next question.
Then. I get the feeling it's a Sontaran.
Okay.
But I want it to be a Dalek. So I'm debating on, do I want to be wrong or like very wrong? Because it could very well be a Cyberman too.
It could.
Can I ask the specifics for why it is getting into the TARDIS?
He needs its help translating something.
Okay. I'm going to say a Sontaran. Okay. I'll be so tickled pink if it's a Dalek.
Well, we'll find out if the Doctor has taken on a little Sontaran sidekick.
Yeah, all Sontarans look like my mom's husband. And I can say that because she doesn't listen to this podcast.
And additionally, in this episode, the Doctor and Clara visit a place called the Church of the Papal Mainframe. Or the Catholic Computer Church, I guess, is how that sort of translates.
Ah, yes.
But when you go to this church, you are not allowed to bring something. Is it weapons, money, or clothes?
Oh, fun. How Catholic is this church?
I would say not very much.
Okay.
They are way more mainframe than papal, I think. In terms of aesthetics, they're very sci-fi.
I would say weapons then.
All right. So you think you're on. I'm
tickled at the prospects of it being clothes. I think that's really funny. Weapons, though, feels more apropos for the Doctor, because that's him being like, oh, Sonic isn't a weapon. It's a screwdriver. Whatever.
All right. Well, we will find out together if the Doctor has a little Sontaran sidekick and if you're not allowed to bring weapons into the church.
I mean, I feel like most churches don't like you to bring weapons inside.
Unless it's their own weapons. And then it's the Crusades. The Space Crusades.
Yeah. But again, if I'm double whammied wrong and it is Dalek and everybody is naked, then we're in for a wonderful time.
Well, we will find out together if this episode features a naked Dalek as we watch
Ew, no, they need their clothes on. They need their carapaces. Thanks.
As we watch the 2013 Christmas special, The Time of the Doctor. This week, since this is a special Christmas episode, I thought we'd gather together and share a little Christmas tale. Oh, before I get going, while this isn't technically an ad, I should tell you it is still sponsored, but I think it's pretty subtle. You should barely notice. Once there was a town, much like any other, filled with low finance loans, reduced lease payments, and specialty sales, and everybody came to see. Although no one understood the town, everyone who approached it found themselves afraid. Except one woman, the woman who stayed for Toyotathon. The town called Toyotathon was threatened with war that would never end. But there was a new sheriff in town to protect your new car, truck, or SUV. As the Honda days passed, and the Honda years, she stayed true to the town. On the parking lots of local dealers, she stood as protector of both her own people and her new home. With every victory, the town celebrated with a no-money-down purchase. In time, she seemed to forget ever wanting a lot for Christmas. And the people of Toyotathon came to love Mariah Carey. I didn't approve that. It feels legally dubious to bring a real person into this otherwise completely wholesome, heartwarming, and not at all overly sponsored tale. So, unless the spirit of Christmas has a lawyer, I'm done. Back to the episode. Jeez. And we are back from the Time of the Doctor.
And what a Time of the Doctor indeed.
Quite a long Time of the Doctor, like 300 something years.
300 years.
I think they said it. I can't remember exactly, but I seem to remember there being somewhere around he stayed 500 years. We only heard 300, but there's sort of an implication that at the end, like, are you Barnabal? And Barnabal, and the guy that shows up was like, no, I'm not Barnabal, implying that Barnabal is not just not there, but he might have long passed.
I mean, I would imagine so. We also don't know how people age on Trenzalore.
I can't remember when they say it, but I believe they said they are humans that live there.
Okay.
So they presumably live about 100 years.
I just know that they live in a perpetual zone of truth.
Yeah, they live in a zone of truth in a town called Christmas. So what'd you think, Cassie?
No explanation for that. It's just quirky.
Oh, the zone of truth?
No, Christmas.
Yeah.
Well, and the zone of truth, I guess.
Yeah, well, the zone of truth is explained by the Time Lords are putting that out. They want to make sure that whenever someone, that when the Doctor answers his name, he answers honestly. But the town being called Christmas is kind of hand waved away as how is an island called Easter, which I like that.
I'm not even going to try to.
That's a very me kind of explanation. Absolutely.
Yes.
It's
a jackassery kind of explanation.
Well, it's just some things are just called that.
No, you can't. Okay, smart guy.
So what do you think, Cassie?
It was fine.
That was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm fond of this one, and I think it is entirely carried by the weight of Matt Smith's acting.
Yes, I think that it is. It's not one that I'm just going to be like, I just want to put on a little episode of Doctor Who for the holidays. Let's put on Time of the Doctor for Christmas.
I can't imagine putting this on for Christmas casually, because I end it just crying my eyes out.
That's the thing, is I understand, like, as a personal preference, I can't sit here and say that it was absolutely my favorite thing. I fully understand why you like it.
Yeah. There's something very meaningful to me about someone like the Doctor, who has spent his life running away, choosing to stay put for a while just to protect really children. Like, we see adults in the town, but the Doctor does not interact with adults.
I made a specific note, and it's partially influenced by my favorite videos right now being Bill Skarsgård behind the scenes of filming It, where he's just so kind with all of the children that he is working with, because he's scary, violent clown man. So my favorite thing is the second they call cut, him immediately jumping out of Pennywise and being a normal person around these children, so that way they are not traumatized and they have positive memories of this filming experience, instead of being like, oh yeah, that was the scariest thing of my whole life.
I'm just picturing, hey there, Georgie. Hey, what's up, Georgie? How you doing?
I mean, kind of. So be influenced by those. I did write down that Matt Smith is very much a kid's guy.
Yeah, I would say,
like, there's just something he has. I know that I've been calling it a Peter Pan quality. It's also a Pied Piper quality about him.
There's a childlike energy that he brings to his performance. He even says at one point that he's yelling at all the kids that cool is not cool. And I do think that's a very, like, strong ethos to what Matt Smith did with the Doctor. Mean,
now being in an environment where I work with kids, the number of times that all of us adults have to, like, hype up these kids that are wearing costumes that are 60s and 90s inspired, like, we all think that they're dope as hell. And we tell them, like, you look so on trend, my guy, like, you are so styling. And they're upset because they're not wearing something that's floofy, or they're not wearing costumes, they're wearing clothes that somebody, can't imagine who, picked out for them to wear, of words for them. But there is something to be said of, like, being the adult in a situation, you absolutely need to make yourself the fool. To reiterate to kids that it isn't cool to be cool.
Matt
because
Smith,
being cool means that you're also a little punk ass bitch, and I don't want you near me.
Matt Smith, in my opinion, made it okay to be weird in a way that not even just weird,
it's silly.
Yeah, well, like, he does things
like
that don't.
He's a goober.
like David Tennant was cool. You know what I mean? Like he wore his like pinstripe suit and his big jacket. And
he's like. So when I was growing up, there was a kid that I had a huge crush on. He was one of the biggest nerds in my class. Like he was one of the like grade A star students. And all of us girls were like, oh, my God, he's so cute. Because there's something extraordinarily attractive about him, even though like on paper, he was a huge nerd.
Well, I do think there's something too, like. A guy that's like unabashedly, like confidently weird. They're like,
and smart and clever.
Yeah, nothing is more attractive than confidence. Among all things, confidence is the most attractive quality, like across the board. And I feel like Matt Smith was very confidently weird.
Yes.
He would make big grand hand gestures when he didn't need to. He would spin around on his heels and make big dramatic things. He had flappy hands. He dances the drunk giraffe.
He's literally a silly goose.
Yeah.
He is silly goose incarnate.
He is the silliest, goosiest boy.
That's the term that we've been using for the kids is you're such a goose. You're welcome.
And I feel like this was, it's, almost impressive that Moffat was like, okay, I'm going to tie up all the loose ends.
I'm also going to make this episode Callback City.
Yeah. I'm going to bring in all the stuff that I made. So that's the silence. That's the weeping angels. That's the church of the silence. We're going to reference River Song, even though we can't bring her. There's no place for her to come in the story. We brought in like Clara's obviously here and we reference Amy. What I think is a very cute scene being like it sort of bookends his journey.
It's nice because it truly is the Doctor's most recent life flashing before his eyes.
Yes. Ending like he has the first meal he enjoys is fish fingers with custard. That's also the last meal he enjoys.
I think about the reality of that dish a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure it's disgusting, but it's, you know, another thing that's confidently weird. And, you know, that he's having this moment of his life flashing before his eyes that even in his memory, you know, Amy is married. I thought that was one nice thing is when she comes down, they have a moment where you see her wedding ring.
Yeah.
So it's like that's the way the Doctor remembers her as being Rory's wife. So even though Rory isn't there, he is still there in spirit.
He is still represented there.
Yes.
And I do like when they had Amelia Pond running around the TARDIS. Her face so conveniently covered by all of the drawings the other children had made for him.
Because it's definitely the same face that he saw.
Oh,
it definitely
1,000%.
Hasn't been 5 years' time.
No, 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 no.
And that girl has not aged and gone through puberty considerably. No, that's definitely the real girl. And, you know,
yes.
I wonder
if they briefly considered if Karen Gillan had other cousins that just conveniently looked just like her.
Karen, does your cousin have a sister?
Like a little sister. Okay. Do you have any others?
Does your cousin have a cousin? Oh, that's you. Your cousin's cousin. Right. Duh. As you saw in this special, Matt Smith was wearing a wig. And the real reason was, I believe he was also doing a play.
Wasn't he doing something else? Because I do seem to remember that popping up on something where the internet was like, no,
yeah,
what have they done?
I believe he was doing a play at the same time that required him to shave his head.
Because I went, damn, that's an impressive bald cap. And then Brain went, that's because it's not.
Yeah. And also it works out because when he ages, it means that they can put the other hair on him. And as I'm sure you could obviously tell, Karen Gillan was filming for Gamora around this time. So that red hair on her head was certainly not.
What?
Matt Smith has made jokes that he wanted to do a take where they swap hair.
Ew.
He just takes them both off and they swap. For me, though, like obviously the end of this story is really just Matt Smith getting to do two monologues back to back.
Oh, yeah.
Which is so very indicative of his run, I think. Is the only thing that could end. The only thing bigger than doing a Matt Smith monologue is doing two Matt Smith monologues. And I really like them both. I really like his where the Daleks are like, we know the rules of regeneration. And he was like, oh, now I'm pissed. You brought up the rules. Fuck you. You know what? I'm regenerating just out of spite.
It's the crack that went, oh, here you go.
Here, enjoy a little dusting of regeneration energy. We're gonna salt bay it to you. Just
you can regenerate now, but you're already an old man, so you get to regenerate right into another old man.
Well, that's the, I also like that where he's like, you've been trying to kill me for centuries, and here I am dying of old age. It reminds me of have you ever seen the movie Tombstone?
No, I have not seen the movie Tombstone.
So this is some light spoilers for it, but it's a 20-year-old movie at this point. In it,
what?
Val Kilmer plays Doc Holliday, and he has this whole bit where he's certain he's going to die with his boots on, meaning he's going to die in a gunfight. And then he ends up dying of tuberculosis with his boots decidedly off. And so
ain't
that's
that
what
it, just the way
that's what it reminded me of, is just like, you guys have been trying to kill me forever, but you are so scared of what I might do that now I'm going to sit here on this clock tower and die of old age while you're still too scared to shoot me.
Clock tower that both is and isn't just a giant TARDIS looking machination.
ain't that just the way that even when he's not in his TARDIS, he's still living in a time machine.
Yep. Oh my god, a time machine, a clock. I get it. Cheeky bastards.
The wheels were turning there. And I also feel like they specifically wanted to do it because Stephen Moffat was like, 12 doctors, clock strikes 12, clock strikes 12.
I did write down the doctor's wizard tower. Because that's also what it's giving.
It is a little bit, especially because it's covered in, like, that's where he does his tinkerings.
Yeah, the inside is, he both is and isn't Father Christmas. He is the father of Christmas Town, not affiliated to the Nightmare Before, but.
Can you imagine if this was the Christmas Town Jack Skellington stepped into?
Yes.
What's this? A doctor in a tower.
He wouldn't have made two steps before a Dalek.
He makes two steps and then the doctor thinks it's one of the silence.
Yeah, either one of the silence, or he looks at a weeping angel and goes, oh, that's very cool. And then just takes that back with him.
We're going to do that trick next year, next Halloween. Goodbye.
Just everybody in Halloween Town is so enamored by the weeping angel.
By red light, green light.
Yeah, basically. All the kids. Aw, all the toys. They love her. Yeah, I did not like Weeping Angel Graveyard, though. That was...
Yeah, the Weeping Angel's buried in the snow.
Yeah, fuck that noise. Am I so excited for the next time we go to a snowy place and I'm just going to have a hand on deck that I can stick in and... Have that be a little bit for me. Yep.
I do like that Moffat has found a few different ways to like bring in the weeping angels from like interesting places. I like him using them as they are written way more than the image of an angel becomes an angel.
Yeah. However, do you know how much an image of an angel becomes an angel has influenced any and all decision making I have had?
You don't draw angels anymore?
No. Well, because I thought for a half second, like, oh, I could do kind of a sneaky thing where, like, if I were to get an angel tattoo that has a striking resemblance to a weeping angel, if anybody asks, it's because I'm Catholic. But then I went, oh, no, that's an image of an angel. I can't get that. I can't get that, or else I might turn to stone.
The image
worse,
of a cherub becomes a cherub.
Or worse, I might get transported back to the 1930s, and I'm not equipped to live in the 30s.
I like my right to vote.
I like...
The 30s, you would still have had it, but...
I like being not on...
Although
actually,
you being a quarter Japanese... You being a quarter Japanese, yeah, would be problematic in about 10 years.
Like being legally Japanese would be problematic. And also I was going to say, I don't want to live off of food stamps and have to ration my food and make dresses out of flour sacks. And then I went, oh, wait, I do that now. See, curse you, recession.
I'm sad that I didn't think about this during that episode of The Image of an Angel, because I'm sitting here like, the image of a hot dog becomes a hot dog.
We go to Costco.
The hot dog just keeps getting closer.
Yeah, Zach, it's because we're getting closer to the front of the line. Yeah, hold on. I'm gonna be laughing about that for a little bit. Because that's really stupid. An image of a hot dog becomes a hot dog. See, when you say it like that, it's not scary anymore. You fucking fool. Oh my god.
Well, if we're going to bring the mood down a little bit, you did not get any privacy points this episode.
No, but I didn't get any privacy points, but my first three notes are so funny.
What's that?
They're one word.
Okay.
Because this was another thing. I was very distracted both with my little kitty cat and also because I was actually watching it and enjoying it. So my first three notes are Azrit, naked, horny, bald!
I believe you have. Hang on, Cassie. Are those the first three notes of this episode or the first three notes of watching I'm Too Sexy by Right Said Fred?
You know what? Who's to say?
Yes, this was you were not allowed to. You were not supposed to wear clothes when you go to church, which is something that you had hoped for. But you had, and I had deliberately put weapons in as being a believable thing that I thought you might as the false hope of the red herring. The red herring, yes. Yeah. I also was curious if you were going to guess Cyberman. I didn't.
I did posit in my head for a brief second the reality of it's not a full Cyberman, it's just a body part, which I'm upset that I did not go down that rabbit trail farther because I would have been correct.
Yeah.
Now, I'm also pissed that we won't get more of Handles.
Right.
Like they introduced such a whammy right at the end. And I went, where was he this whole time? I would have loved to have a little
Cyberman sidekick.
Yeah, I think it might just be my affinity of the Doctor with robot companion, and it was only confirmed.
Yes, Master.
It was only confirmed at the point where Handles just went affirmative, and I went, and I looked at you all dramatic like that.
It does feel like kind of a sucker punch that they introduce Handles just to kill him
because it's a great name. It's a great dynamic because,
you know exactly where the name came from.
Yeah. And it's the Doctor basically having Siri in the TARDIS.
Yeah.
Or Jarvis. Awesome. Yeah.
Jarvis in the TARDIS.
Friday. Which is fucking whatever robot assistant AI. That's so cool. That's a good dynamic for the Doctor.
Because it gives him a way to talk to the TARDIS where the TARDIS can actually talk back.
It gives him a way to talk to the TARDIS, and it also gives him a way to talk to a being that is on the same intellectual level as he is. And also provide him with answers for things he previously did not know.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is that I'm very upset that we got introduced as this super cool dynamic and this super silly little, it's just a head. It's just a head that the Doctor has to carry around.
A little Futurama head in a jar.
Yes. I was a little bit disappointed that we're not going to be getting any more of that. Because I went, well, maybe this is one of those things where I'm going to write down the note of like, it sucks, we're not going to get any more. But then at the end, I will be like
he rolls in, Doctor, hello, I am here.
Yeah, but then we actively see this cheeky bastard die, only then telling the Doctor to reroute the phone. Now, I'm not saying that Cybermen are all gay men. They are all theater kids with the their affinity for
beings that have no emotion. They sure do like drama.
Yeah, they are theater kids with an affinity for drama.
The Doctor and Clara really get to have a few nice moments because we really only got to have Clara for half a season so far. We haven't really got to have her for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
I know it feels like it because we took such a long detour to the 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
But she's really only been around for literally like a year. Because the Clara that we know appeared at the very end of the last Christmas special, The Snowman. The other Claras were all you know, echoes of her through time.
Uh-huh.
And I do still feel very strongly that I think Moffat had hired her as like a temptation of, look at this cute girl we've got you with. She's real cute and real sweet and real spunky. Don't you like that?
Look at the dynamic. You guys work so well together. You're like
Peter Pan, and she's like a little Tinkerbell. You could be Peter Pan and Tinkerbell. Wouldn't that be so nice? And Matt's like, I'm ready to go. I can't keep learning all these.
I'm ready to work for Marvel. Let me be a vampire.
I'm going to go be on the dragon show. Goodbye.
Yeah.
I'm going to go.
I'd like to be a bad guy now. Toodles.
I'm going to go get cut out of Star Wars. Goodbye.
What was he in Star Wars?
That's the thing, is his part did get cut. He was supposed to be a character in, I think, the 9th in episode 9, and his part just got cut out. I believe they're making it up to him by putting him in another movie, but his part got cut out of episode 9.
What a bummer, dude.
Yeah, but I do genuinely like the dynamic they had, where she felt very different from all the other companions, mm-hmm. in that she felt genuinely, like, smart.
She felt like she was the most inclined to save herself.
Yeah. Martha probably being the second closest of characters, that, because I feel like Rose and Amy and Donna have all been very like
stubborn,
not even stubborn, but like
I wouldn't call them foolhardy, but I do think that that might be more the direction that you want to go in.
They're a big personality. You know, their whole thing is like being like, if the doctor is, you know, the smart guy getting the center of attention, she is like, their role had been to put him in his place. Clara doesn't feel like she's doing that. Clara is like, I'm actually happy where you're at right now. I just need to acknowledge where I'm at, and I want that to be respected. And I feel like that's something we don't really get from a companion. Where
I also appreciate that Clara is still living her life.
Yeah.
She is not irrevocably like devoted to the doctor.
Yeah.
She's
an English teacher.
Yeah. She's a teacher. She's
having Christmas with her family.
Like, she's living her life.
Mm-hmm.
But
she's doing wacky sitcom shenanigans where she makes up boyfriends.
Yeah.
I will say that felt a little out of character for Clara.
Yeah.
Clara felt like she would tell, like, she would be like, no.
I mean,
I don't have one.
It does feel a little bit out of character, but also you saw her aunt.
Yeah, that's a good point. Her aunt being like, I've got a whole list. You could make a boy band out of my list. She's like, I don't like boy bands. I do now. In hindsight, I actually can absolutely see her saying, I don't want to deal with my aunt right now, so I will tell her I'm seeing somebody. And here's the doctor, and he's naked. Whoops. Grandma likes it, but
his grandma's cool. Her grandma knows how to party.
Specifically by playing Naked Twister.
Yes, and also is upset that the Christmas crackers, who were not edible.
Yeah, they're almost like
we've had some.
Yeah, they're I guess did you not know the name of them, or did you just forget them?
I forgot. Well, because that's not like an American tradition.
No, it's more of a British thing for sure.
So when we have done them, it's been at the one party we went to where the host provided everybody with Christmas crackers.
I think in America they might even be called Christmas poppers. Like I seem to have
I
that.
Feel like that's more of the thing, because like the crackers here are either things that you have with soup or something else. Irrespective.
Or they're in barrels.
No, it's gonna Sorry, Bean.
The image of a barrel becomes a barrel.
The image of a hot dog becomes a hot dog.
And I there's a part of me that's like, it does feel a little thick. The episode feels a little thick with like how much it's trying to like tie up all of Matt Smith's loose ends.
It's tied up a lot of loose ends, but it's also doing passage of time in a way that doesn't feel like you can see that time is passing.
Yeah.
Like I saw a very good example. I don't know the name of the movie, but I know it's a clip that I sent you on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And it's them showing what's happening in the film, what you are saying, but then also what they're doing behind the camera to make this passage of time in this one woman's apartment. So it's like she's recently gone through a breakup. So she starts like on a dingy couch, like crying, and the walls are gray and it's dark. But mm-hmm. then as the camera is rotating around the room, specifically with the intention of any time that the camera is not facing something, there are people coming in and moving furniture around and building what is the next scene.
Mm-hmm.
But I think about stuff like that when it's like, that's a really wonderful way to show that time is passing by altering the environment around you, by, you know, having your main protagonist be involved in different activities and seeing them progress in those activities.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really get anything like that with this. We just got the narrator, Hot Tasha, telling us that time was passing.
I mean, we also got Matt Smith's progressive aging.
Well, yes, but that was not, we did not see the 300 years go by.
Yeah.
We saw 300 years go by in specific snapshots of Matt Smith's both very good and very bad old age makeup.
Yeah, I'm a little bit I do think that would have been interesting if they had gone through it. I don't know if it would have been distracting, but you think about like what we were 300 years ago in 1720 and 1725.
Yeah, because as far as we know, too, the environment, the world, everything that they were wearing, the people in that world look the exact same.
Yeah.
Fashion hadn't changed. Toys hadn't changed. The houses, the structures around, nothing changed.
Now, there is something to be said of this town had been just constantly under siege. And so it very well could be they can't progress right now because they have to keep fighting off another Cyberman every week.
Fair. But also when your adults and your children are identical. And so there is nothing really. There is nothing to show, because it's not even like you can tell that time has passed because all of the adults are wearing like black and gray and all the kids are wearing pink and yellow. And then at some point, all of the adults now are wearing pink and yellow. And you can tell like, oh, those were the kids in this previous scene that now are adults.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a little hokey, but it is also a really convenient way to indicate to people that are watching a story unfold that these are the same people now.
I think that would have been a good way to do it. Or even just like, we're talking about the passage of time. If we had seen like more of what the doctor's presence did for them.
Like, it's ironic that the issue that we're having with the show about time travel and science fiction, the issue that I have right now is
not showing the passage of time.
Is time itself.
Because I also feel like, you know, if this whole town basically looks up to the doctor, I feel like you should have started seeing the kids start like wearing bow ties.
Yes.
Or more purple. Or doing their hair like him.
Because, like, I'm even thinking this movie, the special reminded me just like a touch of Klaus.
A little bit. Yeah, I could see that.
Just in the sense of like, you have this like wayward man arrive in this village that previously did not have a wacky science professor type. And now his presence there is actively influencing the lives of the people around him. We never saw that influence.
Yeah. Or if it was just like a little joke where it's like, oh, I fixed the feet and also the anti-grav on it. Like, there wasn't a real like tangible change.
Like, if the buildings over time seem to have more like LEDs or.
Yeah. I do wonder, you know, if that
to showcase that it is the future now.
I do wonder if that's like an intentional choice, because also, you know, the town is called Christmas and it's a Christmas episode. So I wonder if it wanted to feel like the doctor was trapped at Christmas. You know what I mean?
Perhaps
like he's trapped in like the Hallmark image idea of what Christmas is. Like the
depends on your Hallmark, but sure.
Yeah, the snow ceramic village.
You called it a snow globe village, which I think is kind of perfect.
Yeah, it's exactly what it means. It's like the doctor is trapped in a snow globe for hundreds of years.
Yes, but also it does not make for good storytelling. Then, if you have to have somebody who is omnipresent and I suppose. Omnipotent, would that be the word to use?
Omniscient.
Omniscient.
to then have to come over the intercom basically and say, this is what has been happening because you, the person watching the thing, mm-hmm. cannot make those assumptions yourself.
Yeah.
You literally need to have somebody to tell you that this thing is happening or else you would not be able to see it.
Yeah.
And that's the part that I'm upset with.
Yeah. Going back to one thing I like though, is I like the way the Doctor and Clara's relationship sort of like dances about for a minute, because he, like, they're very like open and friendly, but then as soon as the Doctor's like, I can't keep Clara here because I know that I would have to bury her if I kept her here. Or worse, she would take me away and this place would die.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't have Clara here for either of our sakes. Not like for my sake, for these people's sakes, for her sake. And so the Doctor sends her back home, and then she wants to not leave so bad. She clings to the TARDIS in the time vortex until it finally shows up again.
I mean, according to the Doctor, it's her fault that the TARDIS was 300 years too late.
Yeah, it was having to like hold on to her for too long. And so the TARDIS shows up and they immediately fight, but then they're almost immediately friendly again. And then she goes, I need you to look at me with those big sad eyes, so I know you're being honest with me when you say you're not going to abandon me again. And he says, I'm not going to. And then turns around and immediately does it again.
Yeah.
I think that's a very like appropriate way to play out that dynamic where they genuinely don't want to be apart, but in this one situation, they are not good for each other. And like to realize that is painful. And I also think that it, you know, leans to a very interesting way for how her relationship with Capaldi is going to have to start off with. Because she just got abandoned twice by him. He showed up and then abandoned her a third time to drop her off with a different guy.
Because she even says, and something that she is upset at the Doctor about for, with, she's upset at the Doctor with, upset at the Doctor for.
She's upset at the Doctor because.
She is upset at the Doctor because he did not say goodbye.
Yeah.
So he sent her on her way, sent her home without saying goodbye. And the last time he sees her, he says goodbye.
Yeah, when he's walking up to...
When he is the old, old man, he gives her a hug and tells her goodbye.
And it's interesting that goodbye seems to convince her to turn around and talk to the Time Lords. To turn around and be like, you don't need to... Like, you're asking Doctor Who, you keep wanting to know his name, but asking his name misunderstands him. He is the Doctor... And you can help him.
It's like, it feels like when you have a friend who has to yell at a kid's parents who is like, who has transitioned, like, this is your child now. This is who they are, whether you like it or not. Like, that other person doesn't matter anymore because this is who they are and their name is the Doctor.
Stop trying to dead name the Doctor.
Yes.
One of Moffat's best instincts is that he will always default to the companion is who saves the day.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Doctor will talk a big game, will put a lot of chess pieces in the right place, but the big move that will save the day is almost always from the companion. And I feel like that is always a very smart decision.
Yes.
One, because it makes it validates the companion's existence. But it also ensures that the Doctor can never be like alone.
Yes.
Because it means that maybe they don't save the day when they're alone. And in this case, he wouldn't have. He would have died of old age on that tower and the Daleks would have blown the planet up.
It's all about balance. Yin and yang.
Yeah. And so I really like the way that the show treats Clara. And I told you before that Clara is my favorite companion. But she wasn't my favorite companion with Matt Smith. She's my favorite companion with Peter Capaldi. I think their dynamic in particular is one of my favorite dynamics in the entirety of the show. So I'm looking forward to getting to that.
Cool.
It even starts off interesting where the first thing he says is, I've got new kidneys. I don't like the color.
Yeah, Capaldi's regeneration looks like it hurt. He just, you know that TikTok transition of like, it's like the people that like throw their head back and then you hear the like sound. That's all I saw and heard. And I went, oh my God.
I do.
Like we just had this so like hyper emotional bit of the doctor's, like I said at the top of this, like mm-hmm. the doctor's most recent life flashing before his eyes.
Yeah.
And him recalling, you know, oh, the first face I saw was hers, Amelia Pond.
And also I will say, of all the doctor regenerations, like the monologues that they will give, I think Matt Smith's is also my favorite.
Well, there was a small part of me that didn't like that. We just saw him as an old man and now he is a young man again. Mm-hmm. But I also don't think that would have been fair to make him do another, have this very emotional moment covered in what I can only assume was a ton of liquid latex.
I think, and also he changed out of his like big fluffy coat back into his like traditional purple suit.
With his cool lace up boots.
Yeah. So I imagine that part of it was we want to let Matt Smith go out as Matt Smith, not as
old man.
Not as an old guy covered in makeup. He deserves to say goodbye as himself, because that is, as we've talked about before, a lot of every actor who plays the doctor puts some of themselves into it.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of have to.
Yeah. And so I feel like that's what that is that that's letting whatever part of Matt Smith is genuinely a part of the doctor say goodbye.
Well, because that's also like, not only is that the doctor saying goodbye, but that truly is this actor saying goodbye. This is their swan song.
Yeah. And I really like, because also his is one of the few speeches that feels like it's something that you can take into your personal life. Where he's like, we're all different people throughout our lives. And that's good. You got to keep moving and growing and changing.
Mm-hmm.
But you've also got to remember who you were. And then he says, I will not forget this. Not one line, not one day of it. I will always remember when the doctor was me. And that to me.
It's like, that's not the doctor talking. That is Matt Smith talking about the doctor.
Yeah. It's also, you know, it feels like one of those moments where you realize you're at a turning point and you do. And you're like, I want to remember this moment. And I feel like that's sort of like, I remember feeling that way when I graduated college. Because I, for people who don't know, I took a few tries before I finally graduated college.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was like, I don't have to do like this thing I have been trying to do for, I believe, a decade.
Yeah.
Is finally done. And I know that I'm not doing this part of my life anymore. And so just sort of like sitting with that and like especially now when I watch it, like I cry even harder because I know that feeling now in a way that I don't think I did when I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my favorite speeches in all of Doctor Who, really, is that I will always remember when the doctor was me. It does make me upset that he's not come back ever. Seems like maybe you should remember a little harder, but I understand you're too busy doing your dragon show and your vampire movies.
You a little salty about that, Zach?
and putting on mohawks and what have you.
Yeah, Zach, do you harbor resentment towards Matt Smith?
Not really.
I mean, literally having a prolific acting career.
Not really. I don't genuinely harbor any resentment towards him, but there's a part of it. Just like, I just want to let me see my boy again. It's the same way you feel with K-9. Just bring my boy back. I don't need a lot, just a little bit.
Yeah, but the snippets I get are just that much sweeter. Like, it's like the hard candies that you find in your denim jacket while you're 2 hours into a movie craving something sweet, but you can't get up and go to the concession stand because they're most likely closed. Am I referring to what happened exactly last night? Yep. I found like 3 hard candies in my pocket that I hadn't, in a jacket that I haven't worn in like 2 years. Oh, it was the greatest feeling in the world.
A trio of happy farmers in your pocket.
I played the game of what is this?
What has Cassie got in her pockets?
Turns out it's some old lipstick, hard candies, and a pencil topper. So now you know.
And I almost wonder if the transition from Smith into Capaldi is a bit of a joke, especially compared to David Tennant, whose regeneration was so violent it blew up the TARDIS.
Yeah.
And this one, you know,
blink and you miss it.
Clara's there like, please don't change. And he doesn't even say anything. He just goes, "Phoop, here I am." And it's Capaldi's big bug-eyed stare looking at her like she's that, like he's an animal in the zoo.
I do wonder if some of that also had to do with that this doctor was an old man.
He's an older man.
But moments ago, going to die of old age. So perhaps when you are that old in your human-ish body, mm-hmm. maybe the transition is that much faster.
I mean, can I tell you my fan theory? They've never confirmed any of this.
Okay, what's your fan theory?
My fan theory is the more prepared your body was to die, the easier the transition is. Huh. Because when you think about like the most violent one so far has been Tennant into Smith. But taking this at its word that, you know, that was the second iteration of David Tennant. He had only been around for like a few months. Like that version of the Doctor had not been the one we saw all those seasons. It had been the Doctor that shot regeneration juice at the end of season 4. And then he survived for like 4 specials and then died. So his transition was incredibly violent.
I mean, if you want to go into a more like to add, not plausibility, mm-hmm. Maybe plausibility. That might be a good word to use for that. But that's like if you think about ghosts, you know, people that died tragic, horrific deaths. Places like that are way more likely to harbor that energy. Whereas if you have somebody who has been lying in bed for several years or even several days, mm-hmm. knowing full well that they are going to die, there's not usually, you don't usually have this kinds of ghosts.
Yeah. And then, cause the other one that comes to mind is the first Doctor's transition into the second Doctor is literally a crossfade. It's a very slow crossfade, but there's no like special effects. Now granted, that was the first transit, that was the first regeneration ever, so they didn't have idea of the big orange sparkles.
Even still, they did give Bill Hartnell a little bit of a like goodbye monologue.
Yeah.
So you could argue that his doctor was very well aware of the fact that he was going to.
And then also we see the War Doctor transitioning into Eccleston, and it seems like, you know, the War Doctor even says that my skin's wearing a bit thin. Yep. And his transition seems like it's about to be very smooth. He's not exploding. You just see Christopher Eccleston's eyes like emerging from the John Hurt cocoon.
Yeah, he just has like War Doctor into 9 feels way more magical.
Yeah. And so I imagine my headcanon, and just, I say this because they've never confirmed this one way or the other why they're all different.
But I do like it.
This is the more ready your body was to die, the smoother your transition was. Like, because the only reason he explodes in this one is because he was just handed 12 new regenerations. It's like his body was topping off, but then his actual regeneration was just foosh.
Oh, we got 12 new ones?
Yeah, he got a whole new cycle, is what they said.
I thought it was just the one.
No. Which was, I think, Moffat trying to spare all other writers, including himself, having to figure out how he keeps getting more of them.
What happens when those ones run out?
Without spoiling too much, I feel like another writer has already figured out that solution.
Well, all right.
We'll get to that in probably 2 years.
I will have forgotten all about this.
Here's the thing. Without spoiling too much, it's one of the most controversial things Doctor Who has ever put in the show. A lot of people very much hate it, which means I expect you will love it, and I'm very curious to see if that's true or not.
Aww. That's so true and accurate. I do love things that other people hate.
Well, that wraps us up for the year.
Aww. No more things. No more episodes. Not even. Oh man, this was our Christmas episode so early. Ah, jeez.
What do you mean early?
It's like early in December, dude. The day that we're recording this is December 4th. Christmas is not for another 20 days. 21?
Wait, hang on.
Depends on when you do Christmas, I guess.
When is this scheduled for?
Next week, I think. So the 9th.
I mean, Patreon gets it early, but...
Okay, so the...
16th.
Yeah, so that's still like a week and a half from Christmas.
Oh, fuck. Oh, okay.
You're not going to keep this in the episode.
Oh, damn it. What am I getting? Sorry. The Christmas stuff's really important and I can't.
Well, yeah, because we're usually really good and on top of getting it on Christmas or at least around Christmas.
And it's not like I can just not every sci-fi thing in the world has a holiday spec.
What?
Then he got an idea. An awful idea. Zach got a wonderful, awful idea.
Zach, what's going on? Whose is that voice?
Join us next week when we're going to watch the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Uh-oh. Zach, I don't like when you laugh like me. This is alarming.
That's right. Our real Christmas special this year will be us looking at the Star Wars Holiday Special. I hope you're all prepared for Life Day. If you'd like to check out that episode right now, you can get it over on Patreon at patreon.com/whoismydoctor, where for as little as $1 a month, you get access to episodes of this podcast a whole week early. Special thanks, as always, to our Big Daddy Dalek patrons, Andrew Blewett, David Gansel, Travis Aiken, and Daniel Lindgren. I hope you're ready for this Tuesday, because it's going to be a very strange Tuesday. See you then.